Ansel Adams, why is he important to the art of photography?
Well, he sort of changed landscape photography in the early 20s and 1930s. Up until then, it had been more of like a survey approach. The early photographers from the late 1800s, they went out with large cameras and this wet plate equipment that was very cumbersome. And they were basically trying to show people in the East this beautiful area of the Western United States. But they weren't thinking of it so much as an art form, but just as a survey or just to sort of document what was there.
Would it be fair to say that Ansel Adams was like a 20th century Albert Bierstadt, the famous German painter who went out and painted Yosemite and the American West for many Americans for the first time they'd been exposed to that incredible beauty? And here in the 20th century, or there in the 20th century, Ansel Adams comes along and does the same thing except for photography. I mean, that's the way I sort of parallel it.
Yeah, he took an approach that was, he called it doing extracts of nature, and that was to take everything that you saw and felt about the scene and to try and encapsulate that in photography. It wasn't just merely to document, but to try and extract out your feelings and your emotions about it. And that was the big leap that he did in the 20s and 30s.
For those of us who aren't familiar with it, where is the Ansel Adams Wilderness?
The Ansel Adams Wilderness is up in the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and it's nestled right between Yosemite National Park and Kings Canyon National Park. It's actually in a national forest area, but it's a designated wilderness.
Ansel Adams, I think it's fair to say, set the standard for black and white nature photography in the first half of the 20th century. Did you have any trepidation or reservation about returning to his, let me call it, workshop, so to speak, to take black and white photos? How dare you?
Yes, I had a lot of trepidation about doing it. I thought a lot about, you know, what I could do that would be different. And it was sort of an important area to me because it was where I had first started doing photography. And then I had gone off and done journalism and a lot of different other things. For me, it was a great experience to come back to that area. But what I wanted to do was to try and sort of put my own interpretation on it and update it to some of the issues about wilderness that are more relevant today, while also paying homage to the wonderful work that had come before me.
How long have you had this idea kicking around in your head?
Well, it was in 2010. I saw a reprint of a book that Ansel Adams had originally published in 1938. It's called Sierra Nevada, the John Muir Trail. And that was sort of a landmark book that showed his view of the area in a more of a personal way. And so when I saw that, that was what sort of got me the idea of proposing a story idea to the National Geographic magazine that eventually became the book.
Your photographs in your book are all digital. What's the essential difference between a digital photograph and the pictures captured by Adams?
One big difference is that I could go much lighter. The equipment, I could put in a small day pack, and so I could carry it all in a backpack and do this leave no trace backpacking, whereas Ansel Adams had to use a burro to carry all his equipment, which has a higher impact on the wilderness. And also the modern digital sensors are much more sensitive to low light, and so you can take pictures by moonlight and the Milky Way and things that are really not very easy or impossible to do with film.
What kind of physical preparation did you undertake to go traipsing into the Ansel Adams Wilderness? You went to some pretty remote places.
Well, I probably should have done a little bit more, but I was carrying a backpack. I don't have too much problem carrying a 60, 65-pound pack. I just go a little bit slower than some of the people that I'm with. And partly I think I'm looking around, looking for pictures, and partly I'm probably twice the age of some of the guides that I've hired. But I was able to do it. I just went a little slower, and I find that's part of the way that the photographer works anyway.
Do you know ahead of time what you want to take a picture of? And for example, I want a moonrise shot or I want a sunset shot, and I'm going to stay here until I get it.
On some of the geographic stories I work on, I put a shot list together and sort of try and go through down the list and check off what I've done. But on this story, I kind of intentionally didn't do that. I put together sort of a list of trails that I wanted to go to and looked at the map. And what I would basically do is I would try to get to a place by the late afternoon to set up camp, and so I could shoot at sunset, possibly even moonlight, and then sunrise. And I could get to the point where I could look at areas and tell what would photograph good in a certain type of lighting. So it was more of a, I guess you'd say, more of an organic way of working, of just going through the area and then trying to find the pictures as they came.
One section of your book, you decide to enter the High Sierra during a snowstorm. Ever hear of the Donner Party, Peter?
We almost were into that spot. I knew that a storm would make for great pictures because I'd done that before, but usually I was like looking out of a car window, I guess, from the road. When it started to snow so much, we actually had to build a snow cave and get down into the cave. And the cave roof started collapsing down a little bit because it snowed about 4 feet within 24 hours. So it was a little bit, I guess you'd say, a little gnarly thing to work with. I'd never been in that kind of a situation. But fortunately, I was with a couple of guides who knew what they were doing and kept me safe. And one of the hardest parts was actually skiing out. There's a lot of avalanche danger when you have that much snow just on the steep slopes.
And for a number of the mountaintop photographs, you hired a plane?
Yeah, I hired a plane and out of Bishop, which is in the eastern side, and I hired a helicopter out of Fresno. And so that's something that I don't believe Ansel Adams ever did, but it's a really neat way to see the wilderness, especially after a fresh snow. It's really beautiful from the air.
Like all of your professional work, your many years with National Geographic, and your last book, Our Beautiful Fragile World, your photographs are not just art, but they convey a message. What do you hope readers of this book will take away?
Well, Thomas Cole, who's the romantic painter, he said that he wanted to try and tap into the silent energy of nature. And I think that's what I think are the best message for us today. Obviously, we shouldn't be looking at nature from a purely romantic or anthropomorphic view. We've seen it more now that we're a part of it, and that these same elements that make up nature make up us. And so that's what I think the main message is, that the wilderness and these wild places have a lot to teach us in the modern world.
The Ansel Adams Wilderness is the latest book by Peter Essick, longtime photographer for National Geographic magazine. Peter, stunning book. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Steve. Always nice to be here.